I'm Kelly.
And I'm Ray.
And this is the Opest Cast. As many of you know, Ray and I have four children. This is our youngest son, Raymond, the fourth, and he's joining us today with our friend Bill Kaufman, who is a honeybee keeper. And as many of you know, I said it last episode, I absolutely love honeybees. We do not kill them at All Pest. We send most of our clients to Bill. And we just want to pick your brain and know more about what you do, how to farm honeybees, what that process looks like, some fun facts about honeybees and why they're so important. And if you know anything about what's going on with the honeybee population elsewhere in the world, and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Want to just start with your background and how long you've been doing what you do and all the things that you do.
All right. Well, I've been doing for the last 8 years, I've been doing specifically honeybee colony removal from structures and homes and such. Before that, it was construction, handyman stuff. But as far as keeping bees, I've done it for about 20 years now.
Oh, wow.
So it's been a hobby for a lot longer than it's been a career.
That's awesome. So what goes into being able to be a beekeeper?
Being able to get stung?
Yeah. I bet.
Otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as far as like how much land would you ideally want to have? How far away from the home do they need to be kept?
That's a great question.
What kind of equipment do you need?
Yeah. Like if you started as a hobby,
yeah,
you don't need any land. One of the big questions that are usually asked is, or they usually state, well, I've got this in my garden, I've got these trees around my property. I'm like, none of that really matters.
Right.
Sir. Bees, honeybees themselves will travel 3 to 5 miles regularly every trip they take to go forage for flowers. So you're looking at like an 80 square mile circumference or area that they forage from. So you can put bees in on the side of an apartment. If your neighbors didn't mind.
Yeah.
So there's more concern about, you know, what your neighbors think about keeping bees in your yard than what they're going to forage on.
Yeah, they're going to find what they need,
right,
basically. What kind of restrictions are there as far as like the town or the county or, you know, I mean, we can't, where we live, we wouldn't be able to build an in-ground pool if we wanted to just because of the zoning restrictions, right, and things like that. So are there...
There are. So there's some towns say no way, you know, and then other towns, you know, based upon they'll let you do things as long as your neighbors are okay with it.
Gotcha.
You know, they don't pull up every rule and law they have to stop everybody from doing what they're doing. It's just if they get complaints or not. I know my town, the town of Cicero, I can keep bees on my land because it's agricultural. And in New York State, bees are a farm animal. So as long as I have 3 or more acres in the town of Cicero, like nobody can say anything.
Wow. No, that's awesome. Okay. So to the removal part. So like I said, we don't kill honeybees. As soon as I get a call and I ask so many questions, I start to gather, you're dealing with honeybees. I give the clients your number. When you get there, like what is your process when you get to a home? What do you look for? And how do you do removals? What is there materials that you won't take honeybees out of?
No, I haven't found one that I haven't been able to get to yet.
Awesome.
I start off, you know, we all got phones in our pockets these days. So send me a picture.
Yeah.
I gotta see that it actually is a honeybee. Usually if you guys, there's other people out there that are pest control people that have no idea what honeybee is. So.
Makes me sad.
Kind of scary.
Call your pest person back. Tell them you got wasps or whatever else you got.
Right.
But send a picture first. And then I kind of get an idea because I've done construction. I know the cavity that they would live in because they need about 10 gallons of space.
Oh, okay.
So you can imagine a 10-gallon aquarium or a couple 5-gallon buckets is about the size of what is in that wall or soffit or floor, whatever. And I make a plan and I cut a big old hole that's got to, expose the entire nest. Sometimes the nest is, you know, the area you got to open up is only about 2 foot square. Sometimes it's a whole wall, floor to ceiling. And then the nest gets removed. The bees get collected. I got a very low pressure vacuum system that takes them from their nest onto honeycomb that's already been made with some food in it for them. So they're right at home when they get there. And then I close everything back up.
So you fix stuff too after you finish that?
Fix it too. Okay. Yeah. And prevent and guarantee they won't be back.
Okay.
At least in that spot.
That's awesome though, that you can at least, because there's a lot of beekeepers who don't fix it after, and then the homeowner has to also hire a contractor on top of it, which they've already been put through enough. So it's kind of nice that you can do it all in one.
Yeah, I've seen removals where the beekeeper is not familiar with construction, and it looks like they came at it with a sledgehammer and just destroyed stuff, which makes it a lot more expensive to repair too. So.
Yeah, that's part of the concern. I've definitely seen people that have known for a fact that they have a honeybee colony in the wall of their house, but they just aren't, you know, they don't have the $5,000 to $8,000 to have the wall rebuilt after the fact. And they just live with it. There's a house out on Cazenovia Lake so I've been doing this 13 years now. When my father trained me, he showed me this house, and he said since he started, which was 2001, this colony has been active, and it has got to be two stories from foundation to roof all the way spread across. I mean, every hole in the siding there's bees coming out of from top to bottom, and they've just, the people that live there are very elderly and, you know, I don't know if they haven't noticed. There's no, I don't know. But
the house is probably better for it to have the bees there.
Yeah.
They varnish the inside and they take care of stuff. There's a misconception that every time you see honey dripping through a wall, you think it's something dripping through a wall. It's honey. There must be honeybees.
Right.
It's not. It's only the wasps that chew through.
Yeah.
So the honeybees actually care for the wood and they stabilize any rot that goes on.
Yeah.
So it's better for them to be there. Yes, they do.
That's interesting. I had no idea.
Very interesting.
Yeah. This is why I love them. They're so amazing. We also have another client. She has one. She's had it for now 3 years. This will be the third year in her chimney. And she's just like, just stay away from that area when you guys come. We do, obviously. But they don't bother. She loves it. And she does. She just leaves them there. And I'm like, I want them. How do I do it?
Yeah. And so I've heard, as far as collecting the colony, I've never seen it in person, but heard about a method is just as well, or not even a method, but if you just are able to capture the queen, that the rest of the colony will follow her.
That is not true.
No,
not at all. Nope. They do not follow the queen. The queen is led by the colony. Yeah. So if the queen disappears, they'll make a new queen.
Yeah,
simple as that.
That part, that part I knew that they would make.
I did not know
queen.
That either.
Yeah. If she's not doing her job, they'll off with her head.
Really?
And making
that's
one.
Brutal. Yeah,
it sure is. Very brutal.
Yeah, but the life of the colony depends on a very productive queen, and if she's not productive enough, they'll say, "We're making a new one. We're done with you."
Yeah.
Wow.
So the fact that you do all parts of the removal and putting everything back the way it was is amazing, because I know it hasn't happened often, but I've had at least a handful of instances where I've gotten called to a house because they had all sorts of flies and they could not figure out where they were coming from. There were everything from fruit flies to just regular house flies, and they couldn't figure it out. And in more than one occasion, the year previous or maybe 6 months ago or whatever, they had honeybees. Someone came and removed them, didn't clean the area or do anything after the fact, and the honey just started to ferment and rot in there and attracted all sorts of other bugs.
Right. There's a much bigger mess if there's no bees and the nest is still there.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you say has been your craziest removal?
I'm sorry.
Craziest removal.
Craziest. I don't know about crazy. I've been in some interesting places, some museums and schools.
Awesome.
And different. I was just at Fort Stanwix taking.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, taking bees out of.
I'm surprised about the schools.
Out of a.
Very surprised.
Fort, you know, old wooden fort. Heavy, heavy lumber. So it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was thinking a minute ago about bees in people's houses. I took some out of this one woman's house. They were in the wall of her bathroom, And a couple weeks later, I guess they were there for a couple of years and they just started to get in. So she says, I can't have them in here anymore. A couple weeks later, she calls me up. She says, bathroom's just not the same anymore. It doesn't have that comforting sound and smell.
Right.
Can you put them back?
That's so funny.
That was great. Yep. There's another woman that I go and check on her bees like once or twice a year. If she has work done, I you know, put a screen over it so the people working in that area don't get in trouble or stung. And then when they're done, I remove the screen so they can get back out. And they've been living in her bedroom floor for a decade. So
it's awesome.
Some people just live with their bees. And so I think that's the best part.
She's got heated floors then.
Right.
The colonies keep it heated. Yeah. How long can you section off? Like you said, you put a screen over it. How long can you section off a colony before it'll start to, you know, impact them or affect them?
Probably a couple days.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have to be able to ventilate it. So it can't be something, you can't just block it.
Right.
Otherwise they'll be looking for another way out.
Yeah.
And again, too, even if they do have ventilation, they'll try to find another way out. So it can't be long.
Yeah.
How do the bees like make the honey?
Okay. Good different question, but good one.
How do bees make the honey?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
The honey comes from flowers. Obviously they all collect, go to flowers and collect what's called nectar. The nectar is very thin. It's very watery. So it's about 2 parts sugar and 8 parts water. So, and just like making maple syrup, when we collect sap from a tree, we got to boil it down.
And like one of those hut things?
Yep. But the bees do it inside their nest and they've got to take all that water out of the nectar.
Just and then once out of the hive and into the wild.
Basically, they suck it up and spit it out, suck it up and spit it out, and they fan it with their wings until all the water's evaporated, most of it. It's 14% moisture, to be exact. But the once that's done, they coat it with wax, and it's called honey.
Very cool.
What other questions?
Where do you keep the bees?
I keep mine in my backyard. Right where I can see him from my window.
I think he meant more what is the, because he's never even seen like the bee boxes. He's never, you know, doesn't know what sort of, because, you know, obviously in the wild, they can be anywhere from a tree to they pick a building or home, right, wherever. But when you're a beekeeper and keeping them on a property like that, what is the, is it a pretty standard structure that you're going to keep them in?
Yeah, it's just a wooden box like this big. And they come in layers. So you put one box down. And
Two boxes, three boxes, four.
If the colony gets bigger, you put another box on top and you just keep stacking them up.
Yeah. Well, that is
and that's what I thought when I was first started. Like for the first, I don't know what I say, 8 years I've been doing it and 20 years I've been keeping bees. So that would give me about, for the first 12 years, I had no idea bees lived in houses, people's homes. I was just in somebody's house one day and they're like, we got bees in the attic. I said, really? I thought they lived in these boxes and these backyards. I had no idea. I haven't looked back since.
So if anyone's ever, if you're driving by and you see someone does have bee boxes in their backyard, each stack is a separate colony.
Right. One queen in each stack.
Gotcha.
How big can those get? How big can the colony get in those? Or what's the biggest you've seen?
Beekeeper can kind of force them to get bigger.
Okay.
But what happens is once you get over to about 100,000 bees, which on average is about 40 to 60,000 is a regular wild colony.
Okay.
So about almost double what they do in the wild. But then they can keep adding boxes and boxes, but they don't fill them with bees. They just fill them with honey.
Okay.
So as if it's a good year, there's lots of flowers and not much rain.
Yeah. Well, this year might be different then, huh?
Right. A question I get asked a lot from customers of ours, is there anything that people should avoid doing at their own home or things that people can do? So things they should avoid doing that would potentially be a detriment to their local, you know, the honeybees that are in their area, or are there things they can do to promote, you know, or keep honeybees around or have more of them around or just to help them in general? Like they worry about using over-the-counter products on their garden or their the flowers they have, or they, you know, they worry if I use this granular thing on this flower bed, is that going to affect the honeybees in any way? Or
the ones that do are people who get gardens and buy coated seeds to plant, and those coated seeds have a systemic type pesticide in them, so as the plant grows, the it will have within its structure poison. So when a bug bites it, they die.
Wow.
Yeah.
Same thing with the flowers. When the bees come to the flower and collect the nectar, they can get very sick and poison the colonies in the area. So you don't want to get coated seeds. You want to get like an organic or something seed when you plant your gardens.
What to look for on the label? Will it say that it's coated on the label of the seed?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never even noticed.
Yeah. Usually if they're like red or something, or they're a little coming easy to plant, little ball type.
Okay.
Things, coated seeds. There's usually a systemic type poison in them.
Miracle Grow.
As far as spraying plants, I mean, we kind of have to, you know, especially if we're growing fruit plants or flowers that we want to keep. The thing is, we just don't spray when they're in bloom.
Okay.
Typically, that's the rule of thumb, because they go to the flowers. If you spray before the flowers come out of the bud. Before they blossom, it's all right, because after they blossom, they were sealed in there, and they're not gonna have the poison. Okay. They open up, and the bees will be fine going to them. And then when the flowers die, he can spray again, especially fruit trees.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's people that have their own gardens in their backyard always. Where, you know, say we come to do a preventative wasp treatment at their house, they were, you know, we get asked a lot, oh, do I have to cover up the garden? Do I have to tarp it off? And it's only if, you know, only if they're flowering, only if there's fruit on them currently. If it's still just growing as a plant, nothing to worry about. But
yep.
Once you start to see fruit, yes, you got to cover it up. On that note, as far as get, you know, things that would hurt them, what sort of, so I have a close family friend that he keeps bees in on his property. And a couple of years ago, he told me that he had a virus going through his colonies and he lost a bunch of bees. And I didn't realize that there were specific illnesses or viruses or whatever that only pertain to honeybees.
Oh, there's lots of them.
Yeah. What kind are they things that are caused by things that we do, or is it just naturally occurring? It can happen like us getting a cold.
It depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
Some say that it's our fault for being migratory beekeepers by bringing bees around the world, and we have invasive species that, you know, what it is now. Just like mosquitoes are vectors for diseases to us, like West Nile and Triple E.
Yeah.
You know, you can get bit by, you know, 100 mosquitoes, and then just that one might have that disease.
Right.
Well, the bees have a pest called the varroa mite. And it's like a little tiny bug that, you know, sucks their blood or whatever, in a sense. There's other things. It's a different deal. But just like mosquitoes do, and they vector diseases, such as deformed wing virus and black queen cell virus and several others that affect the colony. It affects their lifespan. Bees only live about 45 days.
Yeah.
You know, as an individual in the summer, and they'll work hard, and it's usually their last 5 days that they make that excess amount of honey that we can collect as beekeepers. And if they die those 5 days sooner, well, they're not going to have a lot of honey, and they're not going to be able to survive the winter. But if they do get to the winter and they have enough honey to survive and they're sick, well, that lifespan is shortened. Bees will live about 180 days in the winter. That's when we see that in February, our colonies look great. And in March, they're all dead. It's because their lifespan has been shortened by the disease or virus that has been prevalent within that colony. So it happens.
And does it, so it just spread, it can spread through the whole colony. If one gets it, it can kind of go through everybody, or does it just stay with that one?
The one bee, or it spreads.
Well, like we were saying in the boxes. So if the bottom half has this virus, will it continue to travel through?
Yeah, typically if one colony has it, the whole colony has it. It's not
so what do you do as a beekeeper when that happens? Because you're losing all of the what you were relying on potentially. Mm-hmm. So what happens personally for you when that takes place?
Well, this year I lost more colonies than average.
Which is, we're hearing a lot of that.
Typically in the spring, I can take a colony and split it in two or three. This year I can't. Well, I can. But what I can't do is sell the extra colonies that I don't need.
Okay.
So I'm not making money off of selling bees this year.
Right.
I have to keep the bees for myself and try to rebuild the population in my own yard. Same thing with a lot of commercial beekeepers that do migratory beekeeping and do pollination. They do almonds and cucumbers and melons and blueberries and cranberries and different apples. Apples is big in our area.
Yeah.
Oranges. Those guys don't have enough bees to bring to pollinate. So that also impacts the grocery store.
Right. And that's a scary thought all the way around.
It is. And this year, this past winter was probably one of the biggest losses in history of beekeeping. So.
And have they figured out why? Because I know I caught the beginning of it, of where they were saying, we don't know what's going on. There's so many that are dying. We have no idea why. Right. Have they figured out what was going on?
Not that I've heard yet. Yeah. I mean, it's just speculation right now. But it's probably a lot to do with a new disease that has come through, because, you know, just like you send your kids to school, yeah, you know, yeah, they're fine all summer long. You send them in the fall, and within a few weeks, everybody in the house is sick.
Yep.
It's because
over and over again.
Yeah, because the disease spreads when you're in the community.
Right.
And when you bring your bees to a local place to, like, say, almonds or apples, everybody's bringing them across the country. So they're all spreading their diseases, and they all get it. And they all come home sick. And that's part of it. Another part is the pesticides they use on the plants. And it's just the way they grow things is not healthy. It doesn't provide a healthy diet for the bees. They need variety. When you go to a field of a million acres of one thing, you're only getting that one thing. It's like, let's just eat one carrot a day, you know?
Okay.
It's healthy, so if they had, but like, it's not enough.
They're in a farm where there's all different things, so all veggies and fruits and all of that, they're going to thrive better than if it's just an apple farm.
Absolutely. Okay. Especially with some wildflowers in the ditch or a little stand of trees with some other things in there. Yeah, they definitely need a variety.
Okay. Didn't know that either.
I've gotten that a lot from people. You know, whether it's just, I just pulled up to a house and someone's walking their dog, and I'll get out and they'll say, oh, you're not here to kill bees, are you? And, you know, people hear and just automatically associate the use of pesticides with the declining honeybee population. And I always try to tell people it has so much more to do with the agricultural scale of things and industrial farming and how, you know, they're haphazardly just dousing these crops in all sorts of pesticides. It's so much more on that side of things than it is on a, you know, residential side of things. I mean, I know, I guess there has to be some sort of an effect, but, you know, we're not treating people's flower beds or their gardens or things like that. It's just their home. So, but yeah, I think it's a common misconception that everyday pesticide use or pest control companies have something to do with what's going on a national level. And it's a lot more to do with huge industrial farms
100%
than anything
yeah.
else.
Yeah. It's, I mean, bugs wouldn't come into our houses if they had a place that they want to live.
Right.
They don't want to live with us. They want to live out in the woods.
Right.
They would need those places that, you know, where they can thrive, but they can destroy some stuff too in our own home. So it's what you guys do is a necessity.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
We were just talking about it in the last episode, the amount of calls we get where the wall is starting to thin and someone's like, oh, let me touch it. And then
they always poke it. I don't know why, but yeah, like you were saying with like something like yellow jackets, if they get into whether it's through a soffit or whatever, and they're above the drywall of someone's ceiling, they actually start harvesting the drywall material and using that as nesting material. So it ends up just being a thin layer of paint that's there, and that's it. And I can't even tell you how many people I've had just walk up and poke it. I don't know why. Or one lady put her whole fist through the ceiling. I had an old woman poke it with a broom and the whole yellow jacket nest fell through her ceiling into the living room. I don't know why everyone's instinct is to touch
it.
It's
so strange to me. I'm like, don't touch it.
You can usually, even if you just put your hand against it and don't apply pressure, you'll feel, you know, you can feel the vibration in there. And if you're, you know, a lot of times you can feel the heat coming off of it too. But
saying curiosity killed the cat.
Yeah.
Or the homeowner, I guess.
I guess. I was just thinking about, I might be the only one that's curious about this, but so people love it. Say I go and get rid of a yellow jacket nest for someone. They love when I'll show them, you know, after I've removed it, I'll show them the nest. And you know, it's, I almost tell them it's like a hotel. They basically build one level at a time as they're maturing. And everyone, you know, say just a little paper wasp nest that's on your soffit on your house. Normal people will say, oh, look, you mean the honeycomb up there? Mm-hmm. Because it's that shape and that it looks like what a honeycomb would look like. And I have to explain to them that no, each one of those cells is where they put their larva, and that's where the larva mature and emerge from. But in a honeybee colony, how does that work, the separation between the actual honeycomb and where their larvae are maturing? They obviously have to have a separate area.
Well, they keep their nest, like the colony of bees, the 40 or so thousand bees, they always huddle into like a sphere.
Yep.
All the time. That's where the center is. So if you can imagine a sphere, the queen will stay in this spot.
She's
and lay
in the
her
middle,
eggs.
Right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then outside of that is pollen. And outside of that is honey.
Okay.
So as if we got a box, that sphere is here, here, and here, that the only place for them to go, instead of out here to put their honey, they're going to go up and put the honey up there.
Gotcha.
But they use the same comb for everything.
For their larvae and for the honey.
They'll let the bees be raised in the comb, and in the same comb, they might store honey.
Yep.
Yeah. And
that makes sense.
If we're going to eat it, we got to find and pick the comb out that hasn't had bees raised in it, because they leave the cocoons. They go through the metamorphosis, you know, so they make a cocoon, and they don't remove the cocoon from the honeycomb. It stays there.
And then they'll just come in later and use it for honey after the fact.
Right. So you don't want to grab a piece of honeycomb that has baby bees raised in it and take a bite of it.
You would. You probably have, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But like me, not so much. Yeah.
I don't bring a lunch when I go do these removals. Oh, that looks good. Let me try that. And I try all this stuff out of people's walls. It's like,
that's hilarious.
Yeah, I feel.
What's the difference? Sometimes. Does it taste different? Is it, I mean, like if it, say it was comb that was used first for larvae and then for honey, is that honey going to, is it?
It has a little.
Taste dirty almost?
No, it's got like, it's more of a texture thing. There's like paper in it. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't typically swallow it. I just, you know, chew the wax up and spit it out, and that includes the paper. I really like the pollen. Like most people go to the grocery store and or they call me up and say, you got pollen? We the health food store to get bottles of pollen. I'm like, no, I don't collect pollen. Pollen is collected before the bees go into the colony. Pollen is like a little nut, you know? It's got like this shell on it that you got to crack in order to get the meat out of the nut.
Okay. You know?
But it's microscopic.
Yeah.
So bees, what they do is they ferment it to break that shell and be able to digest it. So once you open a colony up and get that fermented pollen, it's not like rotten. It's good. Kind of like pickles or, you know, sauerkraut or whatever else. And it's really good. And you get that nutrition from it. And the flavors that come from, you know, the area, whatever they're feasting on.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. There was only one time that I found pollen that tasted like what was around them, and it was corn. Huh. Pollen tasted like corn.
Interesting.
So
that's so weird.
But it was just a farmhouse in the middle of hundreds of acres of corn. It's all I could get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that happens with wild game too. If they've got a steady diet of berries, you're gonna taste it in the meat when you eat that. It's just funny that it translates all the way down to honeybees.
Yeah.
I never thought of that part of it.
What does the process look like? Walk us through what it's like to start to harvest the honey and being able to sell it. What is the work that goes into that? What do you have to do?
No, basically just put your box in your backyard with your bees in it. And then when a box of honey is full, you take it out and make sure there's no bees in it. There's various ways to get the bees off it. You can use what's called a fume board and push the bees off with a smell they don't like.
Okay.
Or you can get what's called a bee blower. It's basically a leaf blower, and you just blow the bees off the honeycomb or brush them off. And
then they'll just go right back into their nest after okay.
Yep, they'll go right back to where they came from. You just knock them all on the ground, and they'll get up and go right back in. Just a smaller box. So they've got you just take that honey in. It's all that honeycomb is like little tiny jars, and you got to take the tops off.
Okay.
So you slice the top off, and you put it into a centrifuge. It's an extractor. It spins it out. Kind of like if you hold your water bottle and you try to hold it like this. If you spin real fast, it's going to
right
out. Same deal with the honey. It runs down the side, and then it collects at the bottom.
Okay.
And you can, great thing about honey is you don't have to filter it. I mean, a lot of commercial people do.
But, right.
You don't. What it does, if you put it in a bucket, all the wax and little bits of bee parts that might be in there, little legs and wings and stuff, will float. If there's any dirt or anything that's in there, which typically there's not, because a honeybee colony is one of the cleanest places on earth, which is why a lot of times when I go to do cutouts, I say, you sure you don't want to keep them? I mean, you can pay me to do it, but you don't have to.
Yeah. I love that, though. I'm honest about it. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so anyway, the honey goes to the top, or the honey stays in the middle, the dirt to the bottom, all the other floaty stuff to the top, and you just turn the valve on the side of the bucket. That lets the honey drain out of the middle of that, and it's show quality stuff.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so how much honey do you typically get from one hive?
I get about 27 to 35 pounds per colony, okay, which is low compared to most. Some people can get 75 to 150 pounds, but they're feeding back sugar syrups and doing other things to manipulate the bees.
But you don't do any of that. You let them natural. Everything's natural at yours.
Yeah. Right? I don't feed them because they need 40 to 60 pounds of honey to survive the winter.
Okay.
So, I mean, I could take all that honey and give them back sugar syrup or corn syrup or whatever else. And that happens a lot in big industries.
Sad.
And, just because we want to sell the honey.
Yeah.
But instead I let the bees keep it. It keeps them healthier. And then if they don't seem to make it, I've got extra honey to feed other colonies. So, which is why I get a lot less.
Okay.
But I think it's better.
I think it's absolutely better. So this is common for local beekeepers, is to keep everything natural? Or should you be asking, like if you go to a farmer's market, is there questions that you should be asking to make sure that they're not doing those things you want to keep it natural?
Yeah. You can ask if they're rebottling.
Okay.
A lot of people at markets will buy honey from somebody else and they don't really know what's going on. They just buy it, put it in their bottle, and put their label on it.
Wow.
So are you rebottling is a great question to ask.
Okay.
And if they are, find somebody else.
Yeah.
If they're, I don't want to put them out of business, but, everybody, maybe somebody doesn't care and take whatever. Somebody else might want to ask, do you feed sugar syrups? Or do you put in mite treatments, which is a pesticide to take care of that pest that's on the back of the bees?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's done right, it's fine. If not, that stuff gets into the honey.
Okay.
Another thing might be asked is, how much sugar do you feed your bees? And when do you feed them? Because that sugar could just get into the honey.
Okay.
So you want to, I like pure honey. I don't like it.
So ideally they're... wouldn't be feeding them any sugar, or wouldn't have to, right?
Right.
You only have to if you've stripped all the honey out of the colony. Right. It's like supplementing their honey.
And so I'm addicted. I have a serious problem with honey sticks. I love them. And apparently when I get anxious at the office, or, you know, business owner, things go crazy.
It's like a nervous
apparently habit. I grab honey sticks and pace back and forth, according to my staff. And when I run low, they're like, you need to go see your dealer. Like, you need to go get more of these. But they're flavored, so they're obviously adding things to that. What are those additives?
Artificial flavors, yeah. And probably artificial colors.
So I really shouldn't be eating them.
No.
So do you make honey sticks all natural, though?
I don't.
Okay. I'll just have to start taking a bottle
I get a jar in my truck that could keep right in a cup holder. And, you know, if I'm driving down the road and I have a craving, I just tip the bottle.
I love it. It's so good. The honey is so delicious. So, okay. Well, that's good to know. I got to stop buying those.
Keeps me from fast food places, too.
Yeah, right.
You get hungry, a little bit of honey goes a long way.
So let's talk a little bit, share a little bit about your business and where people can find your honey and all of that. Thank you so much for being here today. So I want to make sure that people know who you are and where they can get stuff from you. And you do more than just the honey. I know you do candles and things like that with it too. So,
yeah, I mean, most people find me, you know, just on Google, which is, you know, you search up my business name, which is It's All Better Honeybee Rescue. It's All Better has to be added in there.
Okay.
It's All Better Honeybee Rescue. Or itsallbetter.com.
Okay.
Or Facebook/Bill the Beekeeper.
Okay.
Yeah. But most of everything that I sell is available on my website, which is itsallbetter.com.
I love that name. All right, awesome.
Yeah, we might be paying you a visit. We might want to set up a time to come check things out. We're gonna probably start doing a little bit more on YouTube as far as like out in the field with us, whether it's not, you know, removing large yellow jacket nests or things like that.
You come to the bee yard, you can bring the little guys out and
they would love
that. And I got suits for everybody. So okay. Put everybody in something to keep them safe.
Okay. We can bring our own suits.
Yeah. Do you have any dog bee suits?
Dog. You want to bring the dog with us? I don't think that'd be a great idea.
I got chickens. We can't do that.
Yeah.
They run around too. Yeah. Typically, they don't get along.
Yeah, chickens do a lot of business.
Yeah, they do. Do you have any more questions for Bill, buddy?
No.
About bees?
No. So what is your favorite part of what Mommy and Daddy do?
Just saving the bees.
Well, we don't save the bees. Bill saves the bees. But it's pretty cool that he does. Huh?
Keeping the bees alive.
We also don't hurt the bees either, which I know.
Keeping them alive.
There are people out there that might not be as strict with the laws as we are and would, you know, potentially take someone's money and have no problem getting rid of.
Well, and it's crazy because people will even be like, I'll pay you more. And I'm like, you don't have enough money. Yeah, like, I don't care about the money. That's the total. It's the whole aspect of if they can be saved and you don't understand how good they are for the environment, that's the important part, you know? So it's like, I don't care about your money. Like, you got to get these removed if you don't want them on your property. Right. I'm not going to kill them.
A healthy honeybee colony in a wall is better than a dead one, because a dead one is going to bring in a lot more pests, cost a lot more money,
right,
and do a lot more damage, where honeybees don't do any damage.
Yeah.
So.
And I that you said that they help with the wood and stuff, I had no idea.
Yeah, this was beneficial for me. I think I'll probably end up being able to talk a lot more people into just keeping it where it is if it's not bothering them, you know, or not causing any problems on a day-to-day basis. I didn't realize that they would basically keep up the structural integrity of the house for their own well-being. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
That part of it I didn't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was like anything, like a yellow jacket nest over time is going to cause
damage
and deterioration and moisture problems and, you know, all sorts of different things. And then afterwards, if you don't physically remove the material, it smells like a rotting animal. It's horrible. That's cool that I can have people be okay with leaving them where they are.
Yeah, wasps and other solitary insects, they just like, yeah, we'll set up shop. We don't care. We're only going to be here for the summer.
Right.
You know, it's like a rock star coming in, just destroy stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Honeybees, they want to live there forever. They set their home up to be nice, and they take care of it. They keep it at a specific temperature and humidity. And
that just brought up one more last question for me. What causes, because again, every year we'll get a few calls of someone has a swarm that just moved through their property. And we try to tell them, just give it 12 hours, 24 hours. They're going to keep moving. What, like you just said, if they are picking a spot and they want to be there forever, what causes them to up and relocate as far as like a swarm moving through that's trying to find a new?
Well, typically a swarm comes from a healthy colony. So half the bees leave with the queen.
Just like ants.
Yeah,
just like carpenter ants.
And they want to, and then when they leave the colony, they basically go someplace to chill and hang out for a little bit. Well, they send off scout bees to find a new place. Once those scout bees find a new place, they'll come back and report to that big ball of bees that are hanging there.
Yeah,
and say, hey, we got a great spot. They'll all get up and go to that new spot.
Yeah.
So they're just taking a break while the workers are looking for their new home. That is awesome.
That's it.
So what is the optimal, like, why do they choose a certain spot? What do they need in order for that spot to work for them?
Well, I guess like I said earlier, about 5 to 10 gallons of space.
And that's it, as long as they have the
space. Nice, if it's high up, great. But they want it to be clean. They usually find something else has been, such as mice or wasps or things.
Well, some of the work's already done for you at that point. Okay.
Especially in a house, the mice come in first and they clear out the insulation. So now there's a nice cavity in the wall. And then the wasps come in and they get rid of the smell of the mice. And then the bees come in and the honeybees come in and take over that space.
That's crazy.
That's almost a progression every time.
I've actually seen that exact process happen.
Yeah, it's amazing.
At the same house over a 5-year period, you know?
Yeah.
We're in one spot maybe for a year, and then the following year they either had wasps or yellow jackets in one area, and then all of a sudden honeybees moved in later.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely be in contact with you, especially as I want to learn more, because like I said, it's my goal one day to have some land and be able to do what you do. But thank you all the time. You take such great care of the clients that we send your way. Everybody calls back saying that you were phenomenal. So
we truly appreciate it
and what you do for everybody. And I think that's it for this episode. You good? Raymond, any other questions?
No, but that was a good podcast.
It was. All right. See you guys next episode.
Thank you.
Sweet. Thanks a lot, man.